super heated, right? And now
it was the day. It was solid, the day trading still, version of cars,
dude.
Right?
It turned into day trading. It was pretty nuts. And obviously, as a marketplace, we see that, and we, you know, people were like, you know, it's crazy when people are like, hurry up and list this, because if it lists, you know, any later, I'm going to
lose. Yeah,
it's
no.
totally day trading, right?
Yeah,
and you're
yeah,
like, dude,
yeah.
you got to chill.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
like we can't. We can't
like,
get
you know,
it live
we're not Robin Hood.
Well, we can't get it live in 5 minutes because you have a note on it. You know what I mean?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, insurance is important. It's the kind of thing nobody wants to think about until it is too freaking late. You know what I'm saying? Whether you're talking about home, auto insurance, or life insurance, you really don't want to not have life insurance when you need it. If you've got someone who depends on you, a spouse, children, etc., you know, you hope you never need it, but mortgage payments, childcare, and other expenses don't disappear once you're gone. And life insurance through your job, it may not offer enough protection for your family's needs, and it won't follow you if you leave that job. And since life insurance typically gets more expensive as we age, now is the time to buy. You will never be any younger than you are today. And Policy Genius, it gives you a smarter way to find and buy the right coverage for you and your family. Policy Genius is easy, it's fast, it's not fancy, it's not difficult, but they work for you. They handle it, right? So Policy Genius was built to modernize the life insurance industry. Their technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from top companies like AIG and Prudential in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $17 per month for $500,000 in coverage. And Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find options that offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. They're not incentivized to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. There's no added fees. Your personal information is private. It's no wonder they have thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot. Your loved ones deserve a financial safety net, and you deserve a smarter way to find and buy it. So head over to policygenius.com or click the link in the video description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. Policygenius.com. Check it out. Also brought to you today by ButcherBox and Right On Time. One of our meatiest meat holidays is coming up, Thanksgiving. And guess what? ButcherBox can handle you right there. This is an unbelievable deal, and finding it right now with our show is a clutch player. You ever try to search for free-range turkey at your regular grocery stores without antibiotics or hormones? It's tough. You got to go to one of those fancy schmancy grocery stores, pay an arm and a leg. Not anymore. ButcherBox takes the guesswork out of finding high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, crate-free pork, wild-caught seafood, and now free-range turkey, baby. It is on point. It's super convenient. You get the meat you want delivered right to your door. Free shipping for the continental U.S. No surprise fees. You can choose from a variety of box plan options, from curated to customized, and change your plan whenever you want. Enjoy a range of high-quality cuts that are hard to come by at the grocery store at an amazing value. And you get recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks so you can cook up mouth-watering meals. I used my last ButcherBox crate to make a variety of things. I got filet mignons, did them in the cast iron, some butter, rosemary, and then boom, into the oven at 500 for a couple of minutes. It was delightful. Also, the ground beef. I'm on that free ground beef for life plan that we got about a year ago. So every time I order a box, I get free ground beef. And I use it to make like Korean bowls. It's delicious. Over rice, some carrots, some water chestnuts, some green onions, some a fried egg on top. Boom. It rules. And now Thanksgiving's coming up, so it's time for turkey. the main course for Thanksgiving. It can sometimes be a main source of stress. Not anymore. ButcherBox is offering listeners, get this, a free turkey with their first order. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/tire. Use code TIRE to get one 10 to 14 pound turkey free in your first box. A free turkey. It's like Nino Brown over here. That's butcherbox.com/tire and use code TIRE to claim this deal. We're also brought to you today by Off the Record. We love Off the Record because it helps get you out of the ecosystem that you don't want to be a part of anyway. The ticket system. We all know that tickets on the highway are very, very rarely about safety. They're often about extracting money from you. Between the police, the courts, the insurance companies, getting a simple ticket can cost you thousands of dollars over the time between the ticket, the fees, and the insurance premiums. Thousands of dollars. It's crazy. And is the road actually safer? Have they made it safer? No, we know they haven't. They've just taken your money. That's what they've done. Exit that system with Off the Record. Go to offtherecord.com/TST or download that Off the Record app. Use code TST10 on the Off the Record app. 10% off all legal fees until 2025, people. And that's with Off the Record. Don't plead guilty. You get a ticket, it's very, very easy. All you have to do, if you have the app, upload a photo of the ticket, go to the website, upload a scan of the ticket or a photo of the ticket. Off the Record handles the rest. I've used Off the Record 4 or 5 times since we've started reading ads for them. And literally, here's what happens. This is my experience. Your experience might vary slightly, but this has been my experience. I upload the ticket. I get a confirmation email that they've received the ticket. And that's it. I never hear anything again. They handle it for me. I don't have to go to court. I don't have to follow up. My insurance doesn't go up. It's great. And if Off the Record can't get the points off your record, money back. Guarantee, because that is what they do, and they do it very well. Offtherecord.com/TST or code TST10 on that Off the Record app. All right, folks, today is a great show. My pal Randy Nonnenberg is in studio. Randy is the founder of a site called Bring a Trailer. If you haven't heard of it, what universe have you been living in? It started as a silly little blog that aggregated fun like Craigslist listings and eBay listings and places where you sat around looking for weird cars, and then they basically invented the online car auction model as we know it today. They did it so well, they are pretty much the gold standard in car auctions, the site everybody else wants to be. They sold out to Hearst, which owns the magazine I work for, Road and Track, for a lot of money, getting Randy quite Rico Suave. But he still runs the joint. So we're talking about car values. We're talking about interesting things that we learned in Germany, because Randy was there with me at that conference. We are talking about all kinds of good stuff. And it's great to see my friend in studio for the first time in, I think, 4 years. Bring a Trailer's Randy Nonnenberg on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
No Zach today. All right, commenters confirm. It sounds good. I like that.
Fantastic.
It's very stressful to me to try to be a producer as well as a host. I respect the shit out of Zach for being able to be a co-host while doing it.
But he's busy. I mean, he's doing stuff.
But he chimes in at the fucking right time, too. His brain is going. I'm so glad you made it. You didn't just come down for this.
No, I'm well, okay. I batch a few things together. Like getting down here, but I arrived half hour ago, right?
So yeah, no, you get straight from the airport.
Yeah, and then no, I got stuff this evening, and then put some things together tomorrow.
Do you need to borrow a car? Do you need to borrow?
You got some nice cars downstairs.
I have a Mitsubishi Delica. You'd love.
That could be
fucking
fun.
Great.
I got no car, but I don't know if I even need one. But let me think. Wheels?
Well, you arrived in Germany with no car, and you showed up with some dope shit.
Stuff happens. Well, then it's just like what you just did, right? You hang out with cool people, and then they're like, "Hey, do you need a car?" I'm like, well, yeah, I need a car.
Depends. What's my liability?
That works.
Exactly. What's my liability? Well, I want to talk about auctions. I want to talk about all kind of shit, but I want to start with Germany. Because you were there.
I was there. You've been talking about it a lot on the podcast.
Well,
I,
it was
actually
so
interesting. A little surprised to be like, wow, look at all these episodes where he's going to break down a little bit of Germany.
But I learned a lot of shit.
But I was stealth when I was there. I like wasn't posting photos and I was quiet. I didn't know how.
Well, I'm a member of the media. So I'd asked Riley and Jesus Christ. Rob. Sorry, Rob. I apologize. I didn't mean to blank on your name there. I asked, you know, what do you want? What do you not want? You know, because I didn't want to, like, be the media so much. Yep. But I learned so many interesting things that are really important to, like, the rest of my job. Mm-hmm. And Salika Talbot came and did radio with me last week, and she was incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, 90 minutes of just spitting fire. Mm-hmm. And
but
she
different
would,
stuff than in Germany, right? She had
different
sort of
stuff.
Her canned deal for Germany, and then she came here, and it was like freeform. You guys were all over the map.
It was so awesome.
Yeah,
and there's other people I met there that I like want to talk to in longer format. But what did you learn? What was your like your takeaway from that event?
Well, I was a first timer, and for a couple of the first invites, they invited me for a couple of years, and I couldn't go. And then there was COVID. But I was always like, what am I gonna do here? Right? Like I'm like. Is everybody just going to be like, what's Bring a Trailer? Oh, it's a website. Okay, great. Nice to meet you. Right? Like it's a very mixed.
It's a website with a startup valuation.
Well, there's that stuff, right? So then all the Silicon Valley guys are like, oh, okay, they want to chat about all
right.
that. But more so, I was like, yeah, who would be there? What do I want to hear about? Like crazy flying, you know, drone stuff and all that stuff is not totally in my wheelhouse, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the transportation stuff, a lot of the where is transportation going, started some cool conversations with folks. And also just being in a room with a ton of smart folks that are really deep in their fields is always, it reminded me of college, right? I mean, I went to college with a bunch of people smarter than me, and I was like, wow, where's that guy going to go? You know what I mean?
Me too.
Where's that guy? Wow, that guy's going to end up doing something amazing, right? And so
right.
you kind of watch that and see who was there, and I think you and I will circle back in like 5 years and be like, that dude was in the room.
Yeah,
what I mean?
For sure.
And stuff like that, I think you always want to put yourself in those positions because you can, even if you don't think it's a perfect fit, you can find things that kind of stimulate conversation and thoughts and new things.
Yeah. Did anything in particular really stand out to you as like?
I've been looking. I mean,
what
man,
was your what? Were you, what was, what's the one like factoid that you've been telling people that you learned? Was it the drone delivery thing?
Well,
that's the craziest.
That was
one.
Totally crazy.
Yeah, that one's weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, I want to go. You mentioned in one of your shows.
We
you're
should
like,
have
I
a group.
Go to
we
that
should
town.
Have a group trip to that town. And just start ordering shit.
But you and I were shaking our heads while we were there because we were like, I don't want like a bunch of drones over my head. But no, but beyond that, I think I've been thinking about, you know, the mix of bike lanes, car lanes, mm-hmm. Stuff that's really practical to me. Like I'm driving down the road in my town and there's people on bikes and there's like a totally vulnerable e-biker cutting
right.
across. There's rich kids riding Super 73s to school or whatever. And you're like, wow, somebody's going to die doing this. That sort of stuff is fascinating to me. So thinking about how to be intentional about that and where that leads, just sort of more real world. The super, you know, 20 years away, you know, your cappuccino showing up at your balcony and stuff. I'm not that worried about it.
Yeah.
But I am thinking about like my drive across town where I live, right? And there's different modes of transportation and how people are using it. And how people are using public transportation and stuff like that. Because when I'm driving my weird old cars, which I'm psyched that I get to do for a good while, there's going to be all sorts of weird like I pull up and there's a Lucid that pulls up and then I got my, you know, 80s car making a bunch of noise.
Sure.
And there's just this interesting understanding that people are starting to have of the different modes and ways of doing this. And I think that room was a good example of that because there's just a ton of stuff and it's all mixed into this pot and we've got to figure out how it all gets along for 20, 30, however many years until it's more universalized.
Isn't it weird? And today, this morning, I went to this thing downtown where a company was showing off a functional prototype of a $25,000 quotes. It's going to be cheap, whether it's 25 or 27, whatever. Electric hatchback. Think it's like the size of like
it's like a Leaf.
Yes, give or take. Yeah, okay. Give or take. Electric Leaf. It's not a Nissan. It's from this company in Germany, and it's covered in solar panels.
Okay.
And it's
was this covered? I feel like I saw a snapshot or a story of this.
Probably. Yeah, probably. And supposedly these solar panels can add, in Los Angeles, where it's very sunny, if you park outside most of the time, they can add up to 6,000 miles worth of electric charge per year. And I'm sure that's right. I actually believe them that this will do that. But they were so passionate about how we've got to transition personally owned passenger cars to EVs. And that is the most urgent thing. Mm-hmm. But some of them charts in Germany, I'm like, yo, industry is like 40% of that pie. And personally owned passenger cars are like 11%. Like, we're focusing so much energy on making people consume this new type of vehicle versus making industry that profits off doing it this way change their ways, you know. And that's always, every time I meet someone that's like, I'm changing personal transportation, I'm like, man, are you making a small dent in a small dent?
Yeah, and I'm all mixed up, man, because before I went to that thing, I'm like one of the guys shopping, you know, Lightnings and Rivians and different sorts of stuff that I think is pretty cool and mainstream electric. I don't have an electric car yet. And I wired the garage, and I think I'm like kind of on the verge. And then a couple of the talks there, and then a couple of the podcasts that you've had, including Sleeka, were a little bit like, well, is this something you have to like dive into it and it's really going to be solving things, or is it more complex than
that? But it's also okay if you just like it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you're it's not like a massive net negative. It's not, you're not making things worse by purchasing an electric vehicle. It's you're not the problem if you go buy an electric car and if you put a charger in your house. You're not the problem, but you're also not the solution.
Totally.
You know, and so it's totally
okay.
Which is
not how it's been framed by a lot of folks.
Of course not. Right, yeah, no. Totally. I think it goes back to the Al Gore thing, an Inconvenient Truth, which really framed it as...
I think I saw that in the theater.
Maybe. Yeah, I did. Like, you, consumer, can change your consuming habits.
Yeah.
You know, and change the world. And where it really fucking spun it that way, as opposed to let's, on an industrial, a governmental, a military scale, reduce that footprint to make a much bigger impact. So buy a fucking electric car if you want an electric car.
Yeah.
I think the Lightning is awesome.
I think it's pretty
cool. It's one of the smartest.
You showed up with it at something. Where were you?
Pikes Peak.
You were at Pikes Peak. That's
right. One of the smartest uses of a gigantic battery ever. Let's run some power tools.
Yep.
Let's run a studio. Let's run your house. Like, what would you do with a massive battery? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, boy, is that a massive battery.
Yeah, totally unnecessary.
That lithium mining guy, he got my fucking head going.
Yeah.
35 mines a year for the next 30 years?
Yeah.
What country are we fucking up next, you know? Mm-hmm. But then, we'll cap off Germany with, then the very last day, we finished the last talk, and this motherfucker rolls up in a blower Bentley, like Baron von Munchausen, you know, with a big mustache.
Not me. You're not talking about me.
No, your buddy, your homie. He rolls up like the most badass, you know, he's got a leather jacket on and like a big cigar, you know, and like just like I own the planet. And he's like, I'm here for Randy.
Yeah.
We're going motoring. And he's like, you see that mountain? That's where we're meeting my friends on them. So, and then you drove away with him. What was the rest of that day like?
It was amazing. So that, I mean, the Germany, the conference that we were at was just sort of part of my trip. But I'm laughing here as you say that. That fellow shows up and he said he was going to bring a fun car and we were going to go driving a little bit. And I'd been working on that and said, I'm coming to Tegernsee. He's actually a Tegernsee local. And that region is, you know, south of Munich. And there's some pretty well-heeled folks down there. It's a beautiful lake.
Did you see the real estate office there?
I didn't look at the stuff in the window.
Dude.
It's cash.
It's the Lake Como of Germany.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a couple lakes that are like that.
It's millions of euros for fairly average-looking properties there. Yeah. But
so
go
it's
on.
It's a nice
heavy
hitting
area.
Some car collections there. But no, I can give you a little bit of the history there. I mean, I did internships in college in Germany. And that fellow worked with my dad when I was a little kid. Because when I was,
you're actually German. When I was, you're proper German.
No,
right?
I mean I'm American, but I mean German heritage. But when I was 6 months old, my dad took our family, and we lived in Stuttgart for 3 years mm-hmm. in Berblingen, which is right near the Mercedes like E-Class factory area. And so kind of have cars in my blood for that reason. But that guy who's German worked with my dad, and they did whatever, you know, selling computers back in the late 70s, early 80s. And my dad went on to go back to California, and I was raised in California. And that guy stayed around, but was kind of our closest family friend in Germany. So whenever we would come over, we would see him, and he was into old cars, and we were into old cars. And he did really well in business and ended up buying some cool stuff. And then that ends up being a 6.5 liter Bentley. Did you hear when we were
when I
you're
I
like,
go,
what is it? And I was like, a 4.5. And he like shakes me off. He's
was
like, Randy. He's
he
like,
was like
no.
insulted. He's like, only regular rich people have the 4.5, and only kind of rich people have the blower.
He's like,
this
no,
is
really.
A 6.5.
Yeah, he's like, no.
Which is like, what is it, like an airplane engine swap or something?
It's serious.
That's crazy. It's so it's G. It sounded beasty,
but
too.
But it was a cool car. I was a little worried when he said he was going to bring that, because I was like, oh, man, that may shake up all the, like, you know, electric car people and like cars are the reason for the problems.
People were into it.
And then he rolls up in that thing and it's like pulling up in a locomotive, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, this is interesting. But I thought it was still cool.
What I liked about the crowd in Germany was that nobody smartly, everyone was at least smart enough to understand that classic and collectible cars and even the highest end sports cars are really not the problem. It's such a small percentage. They get driven less. It's like every once in a while some politician's like, I'm coming for your classic cars. And it's like, can you even do the basicest of math here? Like,
totally. But that was in conversations you were having? Because that wasn't in like the presentations. People didn't even want to talk about it.
No one cares about your classic car. Like,
yeah, that's what I think too.
Yeah.
And there's a new study out this week about like how much collector cars contribute to, you know, greenhouse gases.
It can't be
so
much.
It can't possibly be much.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So anyway, that was interesting. But no, getting picked up in that car, I'd seen
did
that
you
car
then
before.
Drive up a mountain?
We did. We went and we had dinner that evening with some of his other Bentley friends. He says there's 6 of those cars down near that lake.
That's fucking
3
crazy.
Of them were there. I'll show you the pictures.
Really?
3 of them were there
with us. So sick.
Along with some other cool old cars. And this just happened to be happening that evening. But anyway, and then I stayed around the weekend with him a little bit and then did some driving into Austria and did some really
I think
other
that
cool
Porsche
stuff.
550 Spider shoot was happening right there also. Did you see that like
I was
the next
there
couple
for that.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was happening like right there, wasn't
that
it?
That was on Saturday. That was supposed to be Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's why I extended my trip was going to be to Monday. And that was going to be Sunday, but then the snowstorm was going to come in, mm-hmm. so they emergency moved it to Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then they had 550 Spiders on the mountain and a bunch of YouTube type folks and photographers and the Porsche family and stuff. And then
when
we
went to get on that, lake cruise, as we were boarding the boat, a 550 Spider drove by, and I was like, whoa! Like, you know,
really?
Yeah.
I didn't see
and
that.
And a couple people were like, oh, that's got to be a replica. And I'm like, you know what? Probably is, but we're in a very wealthy area, so who knows? Maybe it's not. And then
silver
I saw the photos,
or what was it?
It was silver,
a silver one. Okay.
And then I saw the photos the next day, and I was like, "These are right near here. Mm-hmm. Like this could definitely have been one of the people who was going to that
thing.
Must
have been one of them. Yeah, there are a number of them. And then the museum brought some cars.
Yeah, when you see a 550 Spider go by, you're like, "Oh, I am in the presence of some shit."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's cool that you saw that. I didn't see that.
Yeah,
that
it was
day.
Awesome.
But yeah, then we went and drove some cars, and I was in that 993, and we drove some cars
over
the weekend.
Mexico
no,
blue,
Riviera
blue,
which I think is Euro only. It was 94 car.
It was
loaned,
hot.
Yeah, loaned, like you said. I mean, I kind of walked into that deal in Germany, which is cool. People
you
like
and I
BAT.
Were the only people that were like, we need to roll up in something. Everyone else was like.
Did you see the end? Yeah. People are, you know, black S-Class going to Munich Airport, right?
Well, and I brought that Alpina B8, which I thought was awesome, and I had a great time driving, except the e-bike guy.
He didn't like it, or what?
No, he rode his fucking e-bike from Munich.
I thought you
see that? No,
he rode.
No, the guy who makes the e-bikes. What was the name of the e-bikes? The guy who presented.
No, but he's like from Scandinavia. He's not German.
No, but he flew to Munich, got on one of his e-bikes, and then rode
it. Carry-on.
No, from the showroom. They have a showroom there, and then he rode this thing like 100 kilometers to Tegernsee.
Hard pass. I don't know.
The dude was a G. Like, and I was like, and I saw him like packing up to go to get back in his e-bike. And I was like, bro, how was this not your entire presentation?
Yeah.
You did a whole presentation about how e-bikes should go faster and all this other stuff and what you believe in.
Those country roads you were driving kind of on in your 8 series. Yeah. And he's like Dumb and Dumber on the dude on the side on his little buzzing bike.
But he was like, I was like, how did you not just pull out the bike and go, I rode this here from Munich?
That's like, pretty compelling, yeah.
Yeah, there's your argument. The bike was beautiful. What was the name of the fucking bike? What was it called?
I forget.
Oh, that's gonna.
There's so many of them. I can't remember.
It was a really. It was a beautifully designed bike. I forget the name of it.
Yep. Anyway, that was fun times. We had some good times.
That Bentley? Did it go?
Yeah. zero synchros in the gearbox. So you got to like time everything first, second, third, fourth, whatever. Like zero synchro box.
And while smoking a cigar, that's multitasking.
We were talking, like screaming at each other while we're driving down the country lane.
And you seemed underdressed for probably. The adventure.
Yeah, I was a little chilly. Yeah, by the end, I was a little chilly. He's like, did you bring a jacket? And I was like, not a good enough one.
I mean, you definitely had the best. It's like the inverse of the red carpet. You know what I mean?
Departure.
Like, yeah. Like, because people arrive at separate times, but people leave at the same time. So it's all about the departure. I should have, like, pulled the fucking B8 up and done donuts
and
the fucking thing.
And that whole scene, there's the lake and the place, and then that car pulls up. I mean, it was a little ridiculous.
I didn't post the photo of it, but I definitely have an Alpine shot of the Bentley. Oh, it's sick. So, interesting times to be someone involved in the buying and selling of cars, is it not?
Yes, crazy.
The market is turning, maybe. Gosh.
People have all sorts of theories. What's your theory?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, people have spent the last 2 years just not vacationing, not...
Tell me about this spring of this year, the things that were going on.
Oh, man, I don't know.
No, that was just like the peak of
just
it.
Just crazy
before
town.
It chilled a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it was crazy.
There was
town.
3 months of like, what
like
the fuck?
Like, people were
is
buying
this?
Cars in November and selling them in January for 10%. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was just like, whoa, this is super heated, right? And now
it turned into day trading version of cars.
It was pretty nuts. And obviously, as a marketplace, we see that. And we, you know, people were like, you know, it's crazy when people are like, hurry up and list this, because if it lists, you know, any later, I'm going to lose.
Oh,
it's totally day trading, right?
Yeah,
and you're
yeah,
like, dude,
yeah.
You got to chill.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Like we can't. We can't
like,
get
you know,
it live
we're not in, Robin Hood.
Well, we can't get it live in 5 minutes because you have a note on it. You know what I mean?
So, bro, my balloon payment's coming
up. Yeah.
Oh,
so you start to kind of just have your ear to the ground and you're like, okay, that's not going to end well for some people. But in general, I mean, there's still cool cars and putting money into cars. Where's it going to end up in years? Like, I think it's going to be fine. But the fast flip and those sort of days, like people needed to chill out.
Yeah. I'm not like a stock market guy. I have financial advisors. I send them money every year, and fortunately they
tell you to buy pink Porsches.
They do. No, I tell them. They like to know. Actually, I give them my market snapshot for cars every year.
Yeah. And my finance guys are like, tell me about CJ.
They're proud
tell
of me.
Tell me about Bronco. Yeah,
they're proud
they
of me. They're like, your Countach is worth what? Good job. Like, anytime you want to pull money out and make a move like that, like, you're good. Like, yeah, like, your portfolio is not up 250% in 4 years, but like, Countach up? Like, all right, cool. You need to do a major? What's that? What's a major? But my policy is to buy it and then not look at it and not try to not panic and hold.
Oh, man.
Same thing with cars, mm-hmm. I think. But so do you study the data? I mean, how involved do you personally stay in the market data?
Personally, I'm not the deepest at that, but our team that's doing curation and has to set reserves with people, like, has to know where it is and where it's going and what's happening, and that's super important because we have to just be honest about that and transparent about that with sellers, but also we want to get the cars through and have them have successful sales. And so if you're having either fantasy reserves, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Or if you're behind, like, and you think it's still April now, you're going to like miss on mm-hmm. everything because things mm-hmm. cool, things come and go. They kind of ebb and flow. So you just need to be really attentive to it. Thankfully, I'm not in that chair anymore where I have to watch like the stock ticker every single day.
Sure.
But we watch, I mean, we have 100 plus results every day. I mean, we have data points that are really deep and we can learn from all of those. But some of it, it's not totally real time, but it's like you need to know what happened this week to figure out what's going to happen in the next month, you know? Yeah. And what happened this week is different than what happened 2 months ago. That's why the old world of, you know, auctions, you look at Scottsdale and you look at Pebble and then you figure out how the year's going to go. And it's like, no, it's like way faster cycles than that. And thankfully, our kind of data and online data can help with that.
The craziest thing to me about the last 2 years is that people have gotten so comfortable shopping online that it doesn't even occur to them to, like, have a car inspected in person anymore. That's fucking wild that somebody will sit at home and granted, like, okay, you know, like full disclosure, if I need to, we at Westside Collector Car Storage have a service where we prep our clients' cars for sale on the auction platform of their choice. More often than not, it's Bring a Trailer, but we've done it on P Car Market, we've done it on Cars and Bids, we've done it on Collecting Cars. It's the client's choice and I give them the ups, the pluses and minuses of each auction platform, and they get to choose. One of the benefits to using us for something like that is we make the car available during business hours 7 days a week. Someone from Bring a Trailer messages us and says, I want to bring a mechanic to look at the car in person. No problem. Show up. We'll have it available. And you, the owner, don't have to deal with any of that bullshit. Mm-hmm. Great. We've sold, I think, 12 cars for clients now on various platforms. I think probably 7 or 8 were Bring a Trailer. And
any of them?
We've had 2 people show up to inspect cars in person total.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to me that somebody would spend, in some cases, over $200,000 and not have the thing looked at in person. Is that normal? Is that the new normal?
I mean, that's what we're seeing. And obviously the information online and what listings look like now is radically different, mm-hmm. which is good.
It helps. It gets you somewhere.
Do we still encourage people to go look at it? Yes. Yeah. If you're close, go look at it. Go look at it every single time, you know, and, you know, close the door and see what it feels like and, you know, hit the starter button and see what it feels like. But the people have gotten much more comfortable with online sales just in general overall, right? Like that's kind of where the world has gone. But some people have gotten a little lax in their sort of diligence and their carefulness on a car online.
Yeah.
And we see a lot behind the scenes and how people then come back and bitch at you. Well, we see how many people ask a question of the seller. Like, if you're not going to go look at it and it's 3 states away, at least like maybe have a phone call, maybe have a dialogue. And we encourage that, and there's tools to do all that, and we built that in from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some parts of eBay and Craigslist and anonymizing and sort of weird friction around actually contacting people, but when we invented the BAT auction sort of format and built it the first time, I was like, no, they got to be able to talk. Like, you want to talk to this person, because if you do buy it long distance or if you send somebody or whatever, like, if I'm buying Matt's car, I'm going to call him and talk to him, right? But in practicality, you give all these opportunities to go look at it, like you say, in your shop or a phone call or whatever, and people use them.
And they don't.
And people, then they don't.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit crazy. And we have some come back, and people are like, well, I thought it would have been a darker red. And you're like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Fortunately,
and it's
like
stuff like that, you got to just shrug and be like, you didn't look at it.
Yeah, we've never gotten in backlash after the fact, fortunately.
Yeah.
We've had people ask us to do some stuff that I thought was weird. I mean, we had a guy, our most possibly controversial listing, which you know about, was that Ferrari 612.
Yes.
The 1-to-1.
Yes.
Which ultimately...
World record?
Ultimately was the highest price ever paid for an F1 612 ever.
Yep.
On any platform, publicly anyway.
Yep.
Really neat car.
Yeah.
It was it had $95,000 in options on it. Amazing. It was wild.
Amazing. And for one of those, amazing result. But then the guy is talking. And
well,
like,
we had the one guy who came to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
He asked me to set up a PPI for him.
Great.
So I gave him Donnie, who's my guy, thinking I was like,
your
look.
Guy in the airplane hangar?
Yes.
Like that guy?
Donnie okay. in the desert.
Okay.
Donnie.
It.
And listen, you put Donnie on a car, he's going to find shit.
Yeah.
Straight. And I knew that. Like, Donnie's
and on
gonna,
any Ferrari, you're going to find stuff,
yeah,
right?
There's no perfect Ferrari. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You put him on a fucking brand new Ferrari, he's going to find shit. But, and Donnie found a couple things. And then the guy went back to the comments yeah. and used what Donnie found to imply that we were being dishonest about the car. No. When the truth is, Donnie found things I didn't even know to look for.
Yeah.
And I responded.
But I like that he did a PPI before.
Sure.
While the auction's going on.
Sure.
Like, that's how we instruct people.
I responded in good faith, in good taste. I yeah. didn't crap all over the guy. Yeah. And he was like, I'll be adjusting my bidding accordingly. And then, oh, by the way, he proceeded to bid more.
Started
he didn't,
two,
he
didn't
win.
Like, what did he bid?
He didn't win. He lost by a grand.
Yeah.
But he bid, even his bid was more than any 612 ever had gone for. So I think he was trying to shoo some people out.
Mm.
But that notwithstanding, what was weird was not that guy. That
oh,
guy I almost
I thought that was most
no,
of the story.
One guy saw from the photos and said, one side looks a little higher than the other side.
Oh,
can
gosh.
You measure the wheel arches? Which I did. And if this guy...
I've done that on a car before when I was
yeah.
when I was freaked out. I was on my own car, and I was like, did I put this suspension in backwards,
right.
or what'd I do?
If
so
this
was
guy
on
was
one?
Actually able to see the 1/8 inch difference from the photos...
From internet photos.
Then this guy needs a job. Fucking hire this dude.
At the CIA.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah, yeah. 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 If he actually saw in these photos a 1/8 inch difference, then you are like a better man than everybody. You just have won car nerdery.
Yeah.
So that the measure the height to the fenders was a that was
well.
One.
That's the whole thing yeah. though on BAT, right? I mean, you have to put up with some of that sort of round and round, but
yeah.
then the end result, if you can handle that and not blow your top,
I agree.
And provide, then it just
I agree.
Like the result at the end, like
yeah.
what happens,
and
right?
that's why I encourage people. To have us do it for them because
yeah.
we're willing to
yeah.
because it's not my car, so I'm not taking it personally.
But it's also a crapshoot. Like that happens one out of just like the inspection.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
happens
yeah.
one out of 20 times, but
right.
it does happen.
It does
right?
happen.
And so you get some where it's crickets and there's, you know, 22 comments and they're all adoring and the
yeah.
car sells. But then you get one where if you do this enough where it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah,
we're going to have
you're nuts.
Some effort.
You're nuts, but like.
Yep.
You know, okay,
yeah.
I didn't. It's not my car. Someone has asked me to list it for them. I'm not taking it personally. Here's what the car is.
Yep.
And that's also why I believe in no reserve. Bring a Trailer's audience is so big now.
Yeah. Stuff's
and
not
so ubiquitous
out. It's not sneaking out for
that a no reserve auction will bring market price every time.
Yep.
Every time.
Or more because they know it's going to sell and it's not mysterious.
I
right?
love no reserve.
Yeah, good.
Because the audience knows you're not fishing.
Yeah.
I invest my time into this auction,
yeah.
someone's taking it home. I'm not going to invest hours into following this thing
yeah.
for a week or 2 weeks, only for the guy to decide at the end that it's not enough money.
Well, I tried at the beginning I hate reserves, right? And
mm-hmm.
so I tried at the beginning to like have everything be no reserve.
Yeah. Wasn't Barrett Jackson no reserve for a while?
No, they
still are,
except for some like super high end exclusive stuff. They'll
except
sneak
if
in.
Craig just buys
stuff.
It.
Well, anyway, you can do the math on how that works. When
yeah.
you have transparent bidding, all no reserve is harder.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, at the beginning, I was like, we're gonna start it at whatever you think your reserve is minus a little bit, and we're just gonna kind of let it fly, and nothing will ever have a reserve because I hate when stuff
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean reserve. And it fell on its face. It didn't work at all.
Didn't
I don't
work.
Know if I ever told you about that. But
I don't
first,
know if you did.
The first
no.
few weeks, I mean, we seeded BAT with our own cars.
I do remember
I
that.
When we recorded, this is the first
yeah.
time I've been in the studio because the last time
we were at the dentist's office,
this,
right?
Well, no, we were in the yeah. In
were
the
we in my house?
No,
or
we were in BAT. We were in the
oh,
shop.
Oh yeah, I came to you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's where all the cars were that we started BAT auctions with in 2014. Because
right.
I was like
the Corvette.
Nobody's going to trust us to sell their car with our new newbie auction.
Sure, sure.
This crazy idea. So we did it with our own cars. And our own cars worked great because we, like, obviously, like, we had reserves, but they were cheap because we wanted everything
to sell. You wanted them to sell, yeah.
And so we were like, let them roll. And then but the first week and the second week of customer vehicles with their reserve, nothing sold. And it was like a bloodbath, and it didn't work. And our initial idea of start this BMW 2002 at, you know, 22.5, because that's what he wants, like 25, and see where the bidding goes. And it was just crickets, and it didn't sell, and it was a nightmare. So we had to adjust in those early days. And then we came up with this $1, started at $1. You can have a reserve if you want, which freaked me out because I've always been very anti cars missing reserve. But
the sell through is still pretty good, right? Yeah, even with the reserves,
totally.
Right?
I mean,
what's your guys' sell through?
At the craziness that we were talking about late last year and into this year, all of last year, I think it was 84%.
That's pretty good.
Really high.
That's pretty good.
Really high. And then,
how does that compare to like a traditional auction house?
They tend to post their results, so it's pretty easy to track. And sometimes they'll have like a crazy one. They'd love it for it to be in the 90s, but it's typically in the low 80s. It's about the same as a traditional auction
house. Pebble Beach is a high one, right?
Well, like you were saying, Barrett is like 100% because it's all no reserve.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know which owners are buying them back,
or the
questions around that. But some of them have higher sell through. But I mean, I've always said what you want online is you just don't want it to be either not believable or just boring. Like if everything, there were some in COVID when in-person auctions were like trying to force the issue, but there were no buyers.
Right.
And they were like, you miss on a reserve, miss on a reserve, miss on a reserve. Like after four of those on Mecum going across the TV, you're like, I'm just changing the channel. Like,
right.
This is stupid. What are we doing?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Really not rewarding as a television
show.
The bid
goes on, but it kind of doesn't.
The bid goes on.
You know what I mean? So
that was where all the good shit was, in the bid goes on room.
So anyway, and they were trying to keep it rolling during COVID. I get it. But yeah, so we always said, it's got to be at least 2/3 or ideally 75% of the cars. If that's selling, like it's good watching and it's good engagement. Auctions, dude, it's a crazy. There's like 100 angles you could take to talking about auctions. There's so many.
Yeah,
so
but
many
I mean, but I much prefer the auction format in general to the traditional. You know, I like. I'd rather negotiate up than negotiate down.
Right. Right.
Negotiating down sucks. Yeah. Convincing someone why their shit isn't worth.
Dude, if you had put a price tag on that Ferrari for $240 or whatever and gone and sat on it and put up with all the people that want
to
come by
to end up
and
in the same place.
One and a quarter and all this stuff.
You know,
maybe
that black car I showed you downstairs? That GT3 we're going to send to you next week?
Sure. GT2 or 3?
It's a 3.
Okay.
It's a GT3.
Okay.
That we're going to put on Bring a Trailer next week.
Yeah.
That's the Ferrari guy's son.
And he's a believer now.
He's into it. He is, yeah.
I mean, once you use the model, a lot of people have said, like, why is there so much staying power after COVID? And I'm like, once you've used it, you know, like, do you want to go and, like, do the old ways again? You kind of don't.
No.
Yeah, you kind of
Although
don't.
It's weird. With certain cars, it's weird because dealers were willing to pay so much that it was like, holy shit, they're going to give me this much? Like, fucking take it and walk away, you know, especially with modern stuff.
Uh-huh.
Modern stuff. What do you think, for a while, it seemed like 40s and 50s were DOA. Like the people who are into them have passed.
A four-door Plymouth from 54.
Right.
You're just like, oh. Like,
but I also, I feel like maybe there's a way for it to come back.
Everything ebbs and flows. I think people who like count stuff out in permanent ways are kind of talking beyond their credibility level.
Right.
Like stuff.
Same goes for the inverse, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. But if it goes out and it gets cheap and everything else is expensive, then you got this market situation happening where, wait a minute, that's a deal all of a sudden, right? So you do have to have the people that like them, and nostalgia drivers are helpful, right? Like I'm not that into most of those cars in stock form, but I like it. I mean, I have a 56 Chrysler, and I think it's totally cool.
Yeah. Isn't yours like a La Carrera kind of deal?
They ran that model at La Carrera.
Okay.
And in NASCAR, interestingly, 56 Chrysler 300B with a Hemi in it. But they I think they're softer than when I bought it. Like my buddy Howard that works with us on our team, he's like, well, you didn't buy that for an investment, clearly, when I bought it. And I was like, nope, I did not. Yeah. I bought it because I think it's cool, right? And it's probably...
Yeah, but it only matters when you sell it.
Yeah.
Well, as long in the interim, it's a car you can drive.
That's true. I've always made terrible car buying investments. It's not my angle to how we do
this. Not always.
I just kind of... If I win, it's on pure luck.
Yeah.
It's not on any.
Didn't you have like an Emery 356 or something?
And we did. Yeah. Which was great. Yeah. Which was great. And some of them turn out going up, but some of them turn out going down too. But anyway, different eras will kind of and people ruled out sort of pre-war stuff. But I think hot rods are super popular and will remain super popular.
Starting to see young people drive deuces.
I think that's cool.
Starting to see people in their 30s and 40s in high boys and shit.
I think that's cool. Yeah. Right? And I think that, each era will have its sort of winners and losers. Like when you say 40s and 50s cars, and I joke about like a low spec sedan.
Yeah, there's
beige.
There's good ones and bad
ones.
There's
losers. Yeah. There's so many, and there are of every era, right? I mean, is an Integra four-door LS with an automatic.
Don't you?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
everybody talks about the Type R and all this stuff, and then you see a super dumpy one, and if somebody thinks it's worth all the money, it's like, well, that wasn't the one.
You know
what I mean? So there's always going to be just sort of winners and losers. But I think things will kind of come and go, and I don't know. Maybe they'll go out of fashion, but I still think 50s cars are cool. So.
I think there's also... someone wrote a good article about it, and I don't remember where I saw it, but about how cars that have an event culture, like cars that will qualify for the Copper State, or cars that will qualify for the Race of Gentlemen, or cars that will qualify, where it's like you're buying, the car is like a ticket into this thing. Those have
I use that as a metric now when I'm shopping for stuff, and that's a privileged position to be in, sure, but like thinking about, oh, I want to do that event, and you're like, oh, that event is 76 and older only, all of a sudden 77s are out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that can steer somebody to want to go.
Well, that's why Donald Osborne with the Audrain, they did their veteran run, which I did last year, and it was super fun. They go to, I think the London to Brighton stops at
1900. You're talking super
old. London to Brighton is pre-1904.
Crazy.
And the Audrain one goes to 1907, because a lot of the same cars, like they made those cars until 1907. Mm-hmm. They chose 1904 because that's when you didn't have to have a flagger in front of your car anymore.
Crazy.
But like, the same car they made in 1904 and 1905, and the one for 1904 is 300 grand because it's a ticket into this car. The 1905 version's 30 grand. It's the same car.
Which I actually appreciate a little bit, right? That there's a cheaper one and like normal people can buy into it, right? I've always liked that. People always talk about like, oh, what car to get on BET, and they always like steer to the expensive stuff. And I was like, but wait, if you get the funky right-hand drive version, it's like at a discount, and that means all these cool people can buy it, right?
Celsius.
All sorts of weird stuff, right? Celsius. I've always liked that when there's like a sister car that is basically the same, but you get a huge discount on it. I was like, get it.
I think in some of the cars, the right-hand drive premium or the right-hand drive discount is shrinking.
Could be.
Like Supras and stuff, Supras are the left-hand drive ones are so expensive.
Yep.
For not really any good reason. I mean, you ever drive a stock Supra? Come on. It's like, it's real whatever, you know? Like, I get
some
it.
People will fight you on that.
Yeah,
right?
Fucking fight me. I get it, but like, come on. You know, it's not 200.
I drew that car in like junior high art class.
Sure, they're cool.
I thought it was super cool, but I never drove one. I've still never driven one.
Drive a Skyline back to back with a Supra. It's not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Skyline is where it's at.
Everybody on my team is younger than me, first of all, so they're totally into the Skylines and are
Skylines are the fucking jam.
Yeah, how much they're worth, and they showed me these cars submitted and how much people are asking for them and stuff, and I'm a little out of touch with that market, but thankfully those guys are all over it. So we've listed some interesting ones. We'll see.
Yeah.
Stuff's starting to come, apparently, from Japan.
It's very rare that I drive a good Skyline and I'm disappointed. They are really, really nice. They're phenomenal.
Better than a Supra. I'll remember that.
Yeah, they're much more well-rounded to drive, and they're built. Typically you'd associate 90s Toyota with the pinnacle of build quality, but Skylines are actually made better. I think.
Okay.
I think people are going
to... I love this. This is a very BAT conversation. We're talking 1904, and then we're talking Skyline.
What's the oldest shit you've driven ever?
Well, it's interesting. Well, I've driven or we've had on the site. I mean, we've had so much.
No, you've driven. You've driven.
I think... Yeah, hot rod, 31 Ford Roadster hot rod.
Oh, you got to get you in some veteran shit.
I've never been in that.
It's like it might as well be a tractor. It's like
The pedals are all different and
stuff. If there's pedals. Sometimes there aren't.
I'll bring a flagger.
Yeah. Sometimes there's a tiller and a fucking handle and that's it. Yeah.
I love that you did that. I've never done that event. And honestly, everybody's got their different flavor, but the London to Brighton, like all these people get all hyped on it and I'm like, I'll go up to the track and take a 50s car or 60s car. I'll see you guys later. You know what I mean?
The one in Newport, I mean, it took us 2 hours and 45 minutes to go 25 miles. And it was like...
You need the e-bike guy. He could have towed us. He's got
more power. It was sketchy. I mean, I could have died three or four different times doing that at 7 miles an hour, you know?
I love it.
This motherfucker...
Gasoline? You're running kerosene? Or like, what
I don't know. I could have been grain alcohol for all I fucking know. But I had a riding mechanic who was wrenching on the car while we were moving.
In motion.
Yeah, while moving.
I've actually done that on a more modern car. I appreciate that. That adds some.
He was head first down in the engine
compartment.
Turning
wrenches at speed.
Yeah,
I'm okay with.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like at speed is air quotes, but yeah,
in motion.
Yeah. What are some of the other interesting trends you can share with us if you've got anything? Top of mind.
Are
classic SUVs dead?
Oh, man. No.
Are not
you
dead?
Kidding me?
I thought with gas prices going up that classic SUVs would be dead.
I mean, people are buying those based on nostalgia. How many miles does somebody who buys a $150,000 Bronco with a Coyote, how many miles
Good
do you think
point.
He puts on it?
That's true. That's
mileage and fuel prices. Fuel prices is actually an interesting topic because people will ask us all the time, like, oh, are people not buying fun cars because gas is $6.50 or whatever? And it's like we haven't seen one thing change based on that.
I would have thought that like maybe it's at the lower price points, but like, you know, Land Cruisers and stuff like that, I thought were going to be a little soft.
Yeah, maybe people that are wanting one of those as some sort of, you know, daily driver, whatever that looks like these days, right? So many people's lives have changed, but... I think that, but most people on BAT are buying fun cars, are buying hobby cars, are buying things that they, you know, stash at the lake house or things they drive on Saturday to Cars and Coffee or things they rip at the track. And those three examples of behavior.
None of those people care about
gas. $5 or $7, they're going to buy race fuel or whatever. And they don't even care, you know?
Yeah, it's
just kind of like it's time, you know, it's an outlet more than it's a financial calculation. So I think that's super interesting to think about. But yeah, we haven't seen a ton of change there. And SUVs, for whatever reason, are going to have staying power. Like people are paying.
Well, there's very few like mint ones. You know, how many people bought a Blazer or a wagon?
Well, okay, there's a restoration. So if it's a mint older one, it's been restored and somebody's put so many hours in, and that person's hours and their hourly rate has gone up. So those are crazy expensive. But if it's, a Survivor 80s Blazer or whatever, there's few
I like
of them.
The two-door 90s Blazers.
You
those
down
two
with
door,
those?
The two-door Tahoes.
I know a guy who bought one of those off BAT.
The two-door Tahoes, those are fucking
those
dope.
Those were weird.
Those
people
are
dug
dope,
those.
Yeah.
That was a cool high school car back
yeah.
in the day.
Yeah, but, like, yeah,
for sure.
I had a bunch of friends who had those in college.
Totally.
Yeah, those they were cool. The shit.
And those, we have a few pristine ones of those that sneak out, right? Well, it's so wild on BAT to see what's submitted and what you're like, where do people come up with this stuff? You know,
yeah.
Like people seek those out. And
is it weird to see businesses formed based on the platform? I mean, I had a guy come up to me I was at Caffeine and Carburetors in New Canaan last week.
Which I heard is awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's a fucking 2,500 cars. I mean, it was a monster.
That's killer.
It was a monster. Yeah. I mean, they do one like in the town of New Canaan that's a complete shit show. It's great, but it's just like too much for the town.
Yeah.
And this one was at a big park.
Okay.
And so it was a little more like better set up. Okay. And I'm not trying to crap on. I met the organizers and they were super friendly. They were great people. They were doing a good thing.
They're obviously smart. I mean, that thing. They're obviously amazing. Smart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow. And they, I think they have 4 or 5 shows a year. So it's not like California where I have 4 cars and coffees a weekend to choose from. Yeah. I mean, people like are. This one is like the thing. Mm-hmm. Like it might as well be Pebble for them. Mm. Because they just don't have as many events. But a guy came up to me. He had a big booth. He had a bunch of old Italian stuff. Mm. And he said, I'm the biggest bring a trailer seller.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Do you know this is 1600 Veloce, dude of the
yes,
beard, Anthony.
Yes.
Yeah, Anthony Serra.
It was that guy.
He's a good dude.
Is he actually the biggest? Volume, is he actually
I think
the biggest
he's
seller?
Number one on volume.
Wow. Yeah. So
which is crazy.
His whole
if you look at the
business
number,
is based on
yeah,
this. Basically.
He's oriented his business around BAT.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, and he does a great job. And there's not. It's really funny you say that because early days of BAT, there was a lot of anti-dealer talk.
Yes.
And there's a funny couple of websites that started up like we're gonna be bringing a trailer without any dealers,
mm-hmm.
but it's not dealer isn't like a binary. You're a terrible person because you're a dealer. There's a ton of terrible dealers, tons.
Yeah.
But if you're straightforward and follow through well and have transparency, you can run a dealer operation really well. And we've kind of fostered some of those sort of folks, and they are wildly successful on BAT. That dude is like all about. Feeding cars, to your point, no reserve on BAT. Modern, old. That guy owns BAT auction car number 2, my white E30 M3.
Oh, I remember that car.
To Saint
Smith, yeah.
And that belonged to a bunch of folks before me. He bought that.
I wonder if that's you think that's provenance? BAT car auction number 2?
Not me, but Sam Smith. I mean, I think we mentioned him. I mean,
Smith, I love him. He carries no provenance. Sam Smith, if you buy a car from Sam Smith, have 2 PPIs.
Well, okay, well, there's that. I don't know, dude. Yeah, it sounds like you know more than I do. But
I love Sam. I'm giving him shit. But if you buy a car from Sam, you better get 2 PPIs.
It seems like he knew his stuff, man.
He does. He does,
that.
But he buys some
BMW
fucking. He buys some scruffy.
Well, yeah. Well, this one was a nice one. Stuff, this one was a nice one. So anyway, but that car is with that guy. And yeah, I mean, he's like an amazing seller. And all his buyers love him, and the cars that go through are good. It's like if you can get that sort of positivity going and get some momentum, mm-hmm. like he's hired a whole bunch of people that help him do it. His business has expanded in crazy ways. And I think he is, yeah, I'll pull it up while we're here. His username is 1600 Veloce on BAT. And I think he may have sold like 800 cars. I mean,
whoa,
really?
Like that's a crazy amount of cars.
Yeah.
And do you have a cool back end app? Do you have like a secret back end?
Oh, we have all sorts of secret stuff. What do you want to know? While I'm here,
I want to know what do you have access to on your phone? that the rest
like
of us
phone.
Don't have access to.
Well,
because like my wife works for a major social media company, and so she has. It's Twitter, whatever.
Okay.
So she has like beta versions of Twitter and like all these like admin mm-hmm. tools that like regular people don't get on their phones. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you have on your phone?
I mean, we have deep user data and different sorts of stuff. I mean, we can see where people are surfing, everything that's going on. So 1600 Veloce past listings, 839.
That's a fucking ton.
It's amazing.
Do you
it's
have
a,
the,
he's
the
got
can
one,
you go,
two,
go
three
through,
cars
just
left.
Scroll through his past feed. What are some of the highlights of shit that guy's listed?
I mean, he's all over the map because he's got a Ghibli 4.7, 1970 Maserati, Ghibli Coupe.
Those
live,
are good.
Live right now. And the crazy thing about him and the reason why a lot of people thought dealers couldn't make it happen is, I don't know if he negotiates it well. Somebody once told me, you know, you make your money on the buy, not on the sell,
mm-hmm.
right? And his reserves are always
the rest
fair,
of us experience
you know what I mean?
This where it seems like we're getting a good price until we offer our trade-in. Like, yeah, $500 under invoice for the new car. You want to give me $4,000 for my AMG Mercedes on the trade? I see.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, his approach just matches really well what we're trying to do. Because you check this out, and there's a 76 Ferrari 365 GT4
mm-hmm.
Brunetta Boxer, right? A Boxer Ferrari sold for $391,000. 2 cars before that, he's selling an 07 BMW 328 convertible mm-hmm. for $14,000. Right?
Interesting.
So he's like all over.
That's like what I've got stored here. Totally. I mean, I've got, well, I literally have, I have cars that are $2 million mm-hmm. and I have cars that are $13,000 yep. and they pay the same to be here, when you, which is weird. Yeah, which, and they're both
well,
happy.
Well, that's unusual.
That's
right?
weird, right?
Because on BT, whether you sell a cheap car or an old car, the way the fees work, it's kind
right,
of
right.
slides.
But no. You can have a $2 million car yeah. and you can have a $14,000 car. Yeah. Now, in fairness, if you have a $2 million car, I have a... It's not exactly the same. I have an insurance surcharge if your car is worth seven figures.
Okay, well, you need
And I don't make money on it. I could, but I don't because I'm a nice guy. No. And I pass whatever the surcharge is from my insurance company.
But your company charges you, so you charge.
My insurance yeah. company charges me, yeah. so I pass it along. You got to pay the cost to be the boss. You want to yeah. fucking keep a seven-figure car.
Yeah.
What do you care if it's a couple hundred bucks a month
yeah.
you know, to store it that like works. And be covered? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got people with cars that are fucking 14, 15 grand here. Yeah. And they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they feel like they're getting ripped off.
Well, and I honestly, back to that, I mean, I love that. Like, I when we started BAT, like, I was stoked to buy a $14,000 car off
yeah.
of Craigslist, you know? And that was, like, my favorite thing and was kind of my reality. And that's great. And there's a ton of people on BAT like that. And we still have a bunch of inventory like that. A lot of people, I think, thought as this thing matures, it'll, like, go to the high end. And I – all high end. And I never dug that. I really like the fact that – sure, things are expensive, and you can buy $1 million car on BAT if you want.
But yeah, I think the comments on the high-end auctions kind of teams tend to bitch that it's, oh, it's all high-end. But it's yeah. not. I feel
if
like they're not.
Look at the numbers.
It's
you
actually
what's
not.
Available on the
yeah.
back end. I mean, we break it down. It's really interesting. Breaking it down by era, like by decade, mm-hmm. like which decade. If you had to guess, which decade is most prolific or most or highest volume on BAT, which do you think it would be?
60s.
I love that because it's the 2000 to 2010.
Oh,
isn't that
okay.
different than you would have thought?
Yeah.
And me too. I'm scrolling down. Yeah. I'm like, it's got to be like, oh, 80s are so popular now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you look and you're like, whoa, there's totally different.
2000
but you look
to
at the
2010.
Shape of the curve,
yeah, why do you think
and it's
that's
actually,
it?
Well, it's really stable. It's like, what is it? 80s, 90s, 2010s are at the peak of the mountaintops.
Mm-hmm.
And then 70s tapers a little bit. And then 60s goes up a little bit again because I don't know if 60s are just more nostalgic than 70s or what the deal is.
Well, 70s,
and then
I
slides.
Mean.
And then
70s is called the malaise era for a yeah. fucking reason.
But it's
yeah.
interesting to look at that, right? And you'd think a lot, you know, if you just cold ask people on stuff like, what do you think of this on BAT? The data can show really different things. So
sure.
it's fascinating.
And now that I think about it, 2010 does make sense. There's a lot,
there's
mass,
cool
mass production of mm-hmm. everything,
yeah.
right? Even the exotics, they made more than ever before. Mm-hmm. We are now in a global market. 25-year import rule gives you, all the great shit out of Japan.
Yeah, 2000 car is an old car.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But it's usable. It's very usable and, you know, has AC and probably airbags
yeah.
and whatever. But that's kind of an older car, right? I mean, I drive a couple of those and I love it, but it's different than a new car. But it's kind of the accessible part of the market. It's interesting to think about.
No, a 2000 car is like it's old. It's well, what's 25 years get you an antique vehicle plate?
97 now. We're
yeah,
97.
To get you a classic vehicle plate
and get stuff in into the country from out of the country, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a lot of data.
That's
on the back
cool.
End.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you? You've never done like an editorial newsletter based on the data, though, have you?
Not too much. We do a monthly recap of results. We have all the data super transparent, like Redfin style, right? I mean, you can click into every car that's
right.
ever been sold, and it's so rich now because there's, I think we're at like 90,000 cars, 88,000 cars.
Lot.
That's a lot of data. And so everybody can go slice and dice that and figure it out. So right now it's a little bit more self-serve, but we're thinking of new ways to deliver that in terms of, you know, handing people if you want to know what DeLoreans, you know, where's the DeLorean market going? People ask that stuff all the time, and we could talk
specifically
about
the DeLorean market.
Well, I'm saying that as an example because you're a DeLorean weirdo, but
I made money on a DeLorean on Bring a Trailer. I'm one of
it.
A very
I
few.
Love it.
Nobody makes
good
money
timing.
On DeLoreans,
good
but
timing,
somehow,
brother.
Yeah.
Good time.
I've actually, to tap myself on the back, I've always been a little bit ahead of the waves, a little bit. And maybe that's because...
Too early or just right?
Just right on the DeLorean. Mm-hmm. I got out of my R32 Skyline 2 years early, but
yeah.
I still doubled up, so that's a win.
Okay.
I had the second highest Fox body sale of all time on Bring a Trailer for charity.
Different machine.
It was for charity, but you're about to, I'm telling you, you're about to have a record. Yeah. That 1,300 mile notchback 5 liter black 5 speed.
I've been texting with people about that.
That
car
could be a record. Mm-hmm. It could. What, do we know what it's at right now? Do I have
know
to look?
Let I me. Don't know.
I'm going to be that guy.
Do it. Let's. Or I can pull it up.
You. You probably have the. Can you find it faster than me? You probably can. I mean, of course you can.
My
you,
favorite part about BAT.
You have the fucking
tool.
Well,
you say what's behind the scenes in BAT. Like, you type Fox. Do you know you type Fox and it comes up? I love that. I love
Fox body.
What other sites? You go to freaking Carvana and you type Fox. You get maybe a Volkswagen Fox.
It's at 45K right now, 4 days to go. 45. This is no joke. This is actually the nicest Fox body I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's not the most option. It doesn't have sports seats.
Red interior.
The red interior is fun.
You're down?
I'm down because
my family had a 5.0, a white with
never
red interior.
I've never seen it on one like this.
My dad complained about the red interior like all the time. But well, I could see it.
Have you seen my Porsche? It has a controversial interior. My Porsche has a very controversial interior, but I don't give a fuck. I love it.
Okay.
I think this is the best year, 89, because you've got the 89 front end, but pre-airbag wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a notch, which is the lightest body
style. I forget
style
what the 88, 89 differences are. Was it like mass airflow or something?
88 to 89 is very subtle. 80, mm-hmm. They're basically the same. But,
ours was an 88. Our family one
yeah
was 88.
But this one is basically showroom new, and it has the window sticker like on it.
John 11 in New Jersey is selling this thing.
It could be a record.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. I love those cars. I don't know. I never told you. I worked at a Fox Body Mustang shop in high school.
Oh, really?
Sweeping floors and putting in Eibach springs.
What shop?
Doing stuff. It was called Charlie's Mustang, San Jose, California.
Yeah, buddy.
And he's gone. He was sort of a mentor of mine, but he's... He went to MIT, and he loved cars. He moved to Silicon Valley to work in aerospace and hated it. And so he's like, I'm opening a Mustang shop.
Sweet.
So he had all these crazy,
I wish
crazy
a lot
cars
of other people who go into Silicon Valley would just do
totally
that.
Totally. Me too. Me too. Yeah.
You're not going to save the world, bro.
You know,
just tune Fords.
Tune stuff. Yeah. So he had some crazy Fords. He was one of those types that lived in his shop.
I love that. That's Donnie. You know, that's Donnie.
Totally, that's Donnie.
Donnie lives in an
so
apartment
this guy
in the hangar.
So Donnie were like, they had some of the same DNA strains going on, right? Like, Charlie Bruno. He was a good dude. He was in the Shelby Club, and he took me to my first track day, and he did a bunch of stuff.
That's awesome.
He was an interesting cat.
Me and Donnie are road tripping the Ferraris tomorrow. We're going to Phoenix. We're going to go see. I'm speaking at Otto at Eli's place.
Killer.
On when? Saturday morning.
Oh wow!
So we're just one nighter. We're going to stay at the Valley Ho, which is my favorite hotel.
I've stayed there.
Love it.
Place is cool.
Super mid century. Yeah. Love the pool.
For auction week, I went down there and I stayed at the Valley Ho.
Yeah, we're going to eat at Bianco's Pizza. It's going to be fucking awesome.
4 till 4 coffee. You
I am
past that place.
Yeah, yeah.
Place is solid.
I am ready, and I really. I love my 328 now that everything's done with it, and it really runs great. And, mm-hmm. and so I'm really excited to do 700 miles in my 328. And Donnie's going to drive his 308. He's got a really nice white GTB. You like never see them.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really cool. So road trip the old cars. It's going to be awesome. We've got some stuff on the Patreon, of course, if you want to.
I love Q&A. I'll do Q&A all day.
We got a bunch.
Sure.
Of course, patreon.com/thesmokingtirepodcast. You want to ask our guests anything about their lives. Of course, you can get the show for free, listen to the live show. Not just get the show for free, I mean ad free, excuse me. And get the show same day. That may or may not happen because Zach is on a gig. I don't think you're going to get the show same day today. Sorry, Zach's not here. But we've got a bunch of questions, of course, patreon.com/smokingtirepodcast. Prashan says, I think I know the answer to this one. Randy, do you think the Abarth 124s, the Fiata, if
the
you
Miata,
were,
yeah.
Will be future classics?
I answer this in a sort of dodge the question, but sort of direct way. I think everything is collectible on some level, right? I think that there's some weirdo out there that loves some particular model. And if in 15 years from now, there's a guy that kept 3 of those and all the other ones, nobody knows where they are.
Mm.
Guess what? That's going to be a rare, interesting item. And we see that on BAT all the time because people bring some some random car you never would have suspected, and it's like, oh, there's three people in the world that love that car, and somehow they all found BAT today, yeah. and they're all going totally ballistic over it bidding.
Mm-hmm.
So I am always hesitant. Some people will say things like, that car is collectible and that car's not. And I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about, because the car you just said isn't collectible. There's enough people out there that if it's a good one, no miles or preserved or the right colors or the one you drove to high school or whatever, it's going to have a following.
Yeah.
So that car, I don't know. I mean, that car's quirky and some people have opinions about whatever.
It's not a good car.
Fiat, Miata, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, different.
Imagine taking a Miata and making it worse.
But, dude, there are cars where you and I would be not a good car yeah. that have huge followings, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you always talk about, like, yeah, the value of that driving experience sure. or whatever, right? And it's like, that value could be negative in my mind.
I once
mind.
Said
like
that zero. All E36s are a $7,000 driving experience.
Okay, man.
And now
so
when
talk
I,
to me about a lightweight. Talk
yeah.
to me about
no,
a,
that too.
A no miles 345. Talk to me yeah. about, I mean, all of those, right?
So now when I walk around car shows and shit, people once in a while will scream $7,000 at me. And I don't even feel bad because I stand by that shit.
I love it. Sometimes you just got to put a
I drove an E36 lightweight out of BMW's museum. Literally.
Okay. Probably the best one.
Probably the best one.
Don't care.
Not good.
$7,000.
It was not good.
$7,000
all day. Yeah. Not special, not good.
But you know what? As you well know.
No, someone will pay $125,000 for that car.
At EAG, yeah. there's seven guys behind you with huge checkbooks that are like, that car is the thing.
Yeah.
And that's fine. So you and I may not dig that car. This guy, I can't tell from his question whether he digs it or not. But I think that those will have some flavor of following.
Sure.
The problem is some marketing efforts like that, it misses the Mazda guys. It misses the Fiat guys. It's kind of a tweener sort of.
Right.
I don't know. So I wouldn't say it's a home run if you're like an investor buyer. But I would say if you're stoked on it, go buy it and rip it around.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Derek Yagan says, I have a 2013 WRX with 180,000 miles.
Oh, man.
Does a rare color and a desired body shape create enough desire to offset the high mileage on the used car market?
On some of it, on an, you said Impreza?
Yeah, it's
it?
A WRX.
Yeah, like, WRXs are super cool. And do they hold up to 180,000 miles? Maybe. I don't know. That's kind of hard to give an answer on that one. I mean, 180,000 on a WRX can be soft miles or can be the worst,
yeah.
you know, 17-year-old
I don't think the rare color matters anymore when it's got 180K.
Not really. But, I mean, it helps itself, right? If it's World Rally Blue or whatever, it's like the one everybody wanted or whatever, they can be in a better position than a white car or a black
sure.
car that you see all over the place. So colors and options and spec certainly help. Mileage hurts a little bit, but I never would have thought that some cars with hundreds of thousands of miles would bring the kind of money they are. I would think you'd kind of write them off after.
You're talking about E30s.
Again, E36s. No.
E30s.
More E30s.
No,
yeah.
Every
I mean,
E30
you can have a 318 IS E30 that's super clean, but it has 140,000 miles, and people pay up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And people go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, it's not a certainty.
Solitary Hero says two questions. Do you anticipate the, quote, COVID bump of stratospheric auction prices to wane once the supply shortage is corrected, or is this the new normal?
Supply shortage is really only an issue on more modern stuff, right? So that doesn't dictate why people bought old Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
But it does dictate why people are flipping new Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, it
over,
definitely
right?
has to do with new cars that are people are paying crazy money for.
Yeah. And weirdly, I don't know why this is. You maybe know better. But like the good models of modern cars, limited edition stuff, cool stuff, we were talking about Lightnings or whatever, Raptor Broncos or a lot of Porsches or Ferraris or even more mainstream stuff. Maybe there's some Mopar stuff in there. The limited and the wait lists, the limitations and the wait lists and stuff have made those so scarce that you put them on an auction and they go crazy because people don't want to wait. Like,
yeah.
I would love it if I had enough patience to get on a list and pay MSRP in 2 years.
Yeah.
But I just don't have the patience to do that.
Well, I paid MSRP for my Boxster Spider, but start to finish, it took me 16 months to get the car.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just can't get my head around that. I'm too instant gratification. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to do that. So will that change? I think that everything I've heard is that the supply chain stuff doesn't look great for the next little while. But like some model, it'll be different for every model, right? Yeah. Like they're cranking out Lightnings now, and that I think that price is softening up.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay 30 over for a Bronco.
No.
But no, if you want so. A GT car, it's still going to be tough to get for a long time.
Right?
Yeah. Question two, pros and cons of a no reserve listing for the seller. I mean, we really listed, we talked about this briefly. I mean, I think with a site as big as Bring a Trailer, there's how often do we have like a real tank on no reserve? I mean, is there just enough eyeballs now?
We don't get complaints about that. I mean, like if it's interesting. People ask, do a lot of dealers buy or sell on BAT? And I was like, a lot of them sell. Not many of them buy because the price is too high. You kind of get it up to market mm-hmm. value. So there's not like a lot of swimming around buying bargains on BAT. It just doesn't happen that much anymore, which is kind of sad. Some people are like, oh, I wish there were bargains out there. You know, you guys have driven the prices up, that sort of stuff. But it's more like it goes to where it should, and there's not, you know, the mistaken Integra Type R that's listed on Craigslist for way too cheap that you're going to somehow be the guy that discovers it and gets it for half price.
Yeah.
Like, that just doesn't happen on BAT anymore because yeah. it's so visible. But it's good for sellers, and if the inventory is good, what the buyers tend to want is just a good car. So there's not cheapies like that slide through. So selling no reserve, I don't think it's that risky, but we also have a ton. I think it's 30% or more are first timers. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's 40-something% are first timers. And if you're a first time seller selling something at auction, maybe you've never done it before.
Yeah.
Maybe the internet's new.
Most of my people are first timers and they're nervous.
And you're like, hey, dude, do it no reserve. And you're like, you're out of your mind. I'll never do that. The reserve's the only reason I'm here. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's interesting. Right. So you gotta give them that. And that's why we have that option. But I think for the buyer mentality, I've been on both on the seller and the buyer side. And when I'm on the buyer side and it's no reserve, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to box. Right. Because I'm going to lose it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's important. So anyway, I think it can turn out better for the seller.
Sure. Kevin McCann says, do you regret selling Bring a Trailer to Hearst?
It's a good question. Yeah, we haven't talked about that at all.
No.
We sold a majority of it, so I didn't sell all of it. I was insistent on we weren't selling all of it because I'm not a genius at financial timing and that sort of stuff like that. So I said we'd sell a lot of it to help us in a lot of ways and to give us some cash flow. But didn't want to sell all of it, so I'm the number two highest percentage wise holder of BAT, and still am, and that's why I'm still here and excited about it, and it's still growing, and our team is too. So there's others on the team that have some part of it as well. I don't regret it one bit. You can look back if something's a huge, you sell a house and then it goes bananas afterwards. Could we have optimized it for finances more by holding on and waiting? We could have, but I mean the bolts were kind of coming off the rocket ship. It was going so crazy and growing so fast after 2019 and 2020. We needed help, and the acquisition helped with that. And so the joke in the early days used to be that the site would like break. I don't know if you were ever there for that. We sold that Red Lancia Stratos that runs around LA.
I've seen that car.
Car broke BAT, right? Like when it was bidding.
Did it actually?
Like, well, no, but like a third of the audience, it went dark. And it was crazy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In the early days that we couldn't handle the audience. And we haven't had those sort of tech issues since the acquisition. And I give that a lot of credit. And I mean, we were doing 150, 200 cars back then. Now we're doing, there were 830 live on the site the other day. It's just like totally crazy.
Yeah.
And that load is nuts. So I don't regret merging up with Hearst one bit. And they've basically stayed out of our way and said, do whatever you want to do.
Plus you got a lot of money.
Plus a little bit of an insurance policy. Never hurts.
Got a lot of money. Andrew Stone says that there is now another recall for Hyundai and Kia. A risk of fire. Well, there's a question here. Park it outside is the interim solution for cars that could catch on fire. At what point do repeated recalls and rampant thefts start to get mentioned in reviews? It seems like reviewers only pay attention to initial quality and have stopped paying attention to automotive news and brand reputation? It's a fair question. I don't have time to pay attention to a bunch of automotive news. I run a brick and mortar business. I do a podcast. I review cars for road. I write columns for Road and Track. I make videos for the Smoking Tire. I mean, I don't know about quote reviewers. I also don't watch or read anybody else's car reviews. So I don't know that people aren't mentioning this. I mean, I'm sure that there are sites. I mean, you linked a site here, so someone is mentioning it. You know about it. But a lot of people ask me about long-term reliability of cars. And the fact is I drive brand new cars. So unless it breaks in my presence, I don't know what to tell you. You know, you go to Consumer Reports. Yeah. There are people who focus on that kind of stuff.
How many miles you got on cars before you turn them?
On press cars?
Oh, no, you're driving personal press cars. You got no
I'm talking
miles
about press
on
cars.
I like your Mustang and your whatever.
Well,
my that may be modern that you have.
Like I leased a Mach-E.
There you go.
And when I've had reliability issues with that car, I talk about them on the show.
Yeah.
I talk about the fact that there's been some tech hiccups, that there was a recall that we had performed. There were two recalls, actually. So when I have the experience, I talk about it. Mm-hmm. But, and I haven't reviewed a Sportage, nor am I going to review a Sportage. But when I review a car, I kind of have to go with what's in front of me. Could I do, you know, I do driving dynamics. That's kind of what I do. If you want long-term reliability, you know, maybe look at Consumer Reports. Maybe look at like an Edmunds, a company that is doing more longer-term kind of stuff. But like I drive a car for 200 to 500 miles. I tell you about its dynamics. I tell you about my experience. Like if there's some big news story, like with Hyundai specifically, like their loud exhaust, people are getting pulled over for loud exhaust with a stock exhaust. You know, we'll talk about it on the show, but like, you know, I can't speak for anybody else but myself. And so I don't, you know, I don't know what to tell you beyond that. Does Hyundai have and Kia have more recalls than other brands? Like, I don't know. Are the recalls that they have bigger deals than other brands?
Like, that data's out there, man. That sounds like Edmunds.
That's a data thing. Yeah, like, totally. It's not really what I personally do. I do driving dynamics, you know, and for better or worse. But like, there's my answer. James Cowley, we got three more here. Although, oh, this is a three-parter. Okay, hang on. I need to ship a convertible that has no roof on it.
Love it.
From Central Coast, California to Orange County, California. Not a high-value car, but old, small, and delicate. Who would you use and what would you budget? And what red flags should you watch out for when choosing a shipping agent? No private jet service needed. Well, we ship cars at Westside Collector Car Storage. So the first thing you should do is email us at info@wccs.com. And we can get you an exact quote.
Am I going to fight you for that? Yeah, yeah. BAT, I mean, ships too, but I'll give that one
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, whatever.
Central Coast to LA.
You're in fucking my house.
I'll give that.
Yeah, you're in my house today. I mean, no roof is not a problem. There's enclosed shippers. I mean, there's almost any car shipper offers enclosed and open. I mean, what would you budget? Central Coast, California to Orange County? Somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 bucks probably for enclosed.
Ooh.
What, high?
Yeah, high.
Well, I don't want to guess. I don't want to say under in public. Gas is expensive in California, man. Shipping
has
gone. Shipping gas price has gone up for shipping.
Yep.
Last 6-8 months, shipping at the high end has gone up. What would you look for? I mean, insured and bonded. That's basically what you're looking for. Legitimately insured and bonded. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of companies out there. What sucks about shipping is that the trucks would give you this massive rail. We'll be there between Tuesday and Thursday. And if you go, I need you to show up on
even
Tuesday,
sort of the good ones,
even the really good
even
ones.
Even the good ones do that. Yeah.
Well, that's why we try to have people just leave the car with us. That way, we're here, and the truck
it's way easier. Yeah.
And so if you want them to be precise, and you go, I need you here between on Tuesday between 2 and 6 p.m., which even at 4 hour window, that's precise for a semi truck. It'll probably double the price. Yeah, that's
no, and having a what I call having a guy, right? You got to have a guy. You go search car shipping on Google, and like the experience is going to be terrible. I did that. I shipped a couple cars because I was desperate and needed something quick or whatever, and it's just a total nightmare. And that's why we did it and integrated, and that's why you've done that as well, because it's like if somebody knows you, you know the right people to call, whatever. If you're just in the public and have never really shipped a car before but have a need and try to go get that on the internet, it is a pretty painful process.
Totally. David Zumot, I like your question, but we kind of already talked about it, so I'm going to reconfigure your question. Based on your market knowledge, give me, and it can be a genre of car. It doesn't need to be an exact model car. A buy, a hold, and a sell. Can you do that one?
Some of the buy ones you can go way high end. I think the high end is insulated from so many like financial ups and downs that it's hard to tell somebody like, hey, what should I buy? Hey, go buy an F40. You know what I mean? It's like is that a good decision?
The time to buy an F40 would have been a year and a half ago, but yes.
Yeah, but honestly, still, man, I mean, where's that car gonna be in 5 years, 10 years?
I don't know. It's a weird one because objectively it should be more than it is, even though it's a lot. But they also made a lot of them.
Yeah, they made it relatively. But it's the one. As far as I'm concerned, it's the one. I'm 45 years old. I think it's the one. Hopefully I get to live for a little while longer. If people that are 45 are 65, guess what I'm still gonna think is the one?
Yeah.
That car.
Fair.
So
yeah.
And I think Ferrari, well, you're the Ferrari guy, you can speak to this. I think the international appeal of Ferrari, like they're like Middle East loves Ferrari, Asia loves Ferrari, U.S. loves Ferrari. You can get into some, like Shelby Mustangs are super cool, but it's like, do people internationally care about those cars? And that
not
whole thing?
Middle East, other places
bit,
not
a
so much.
Bit,
yeah,
but it's like, yeah, do they care? It's just a different set. So unfortunately, it's kind of a like, how can you even say that? Like, what's the buy is. I steer towards international viability because even when the U.S. gas prices are crazy and we have like a president who's a crazy person or whatever, like that doesn't necessarily impact what's going on and what people care about in other burgeoning markets. So thinking about it from a global perspective is how I try to think of that. But I think, I mean, 80s and 90s, to make it a little more attainable on what's the buy, 80s and 90s stuff is still hot, right? And I think will be because people can actually start them and drive them. They don't have a, you know, no AC and a dead carburetor and whatever else when you try to go use them. So people, I think, are really enjoying and adopting those. Hold on to stuff. There's the SUVs that we're talking about, I think you can try to sell them now, but it's either going to be stable or it will go up later on. So I think those are just pretty great items.
I think hold on to your
enjoy.
First gen Vipers.
Ooh, Vipes? Yeah.
All of a sudden, the last 18 months.
Just don't tell me you want the Ronald McDonald with the yellow wheel.
No. Hulk Hogan's got the market locked on that. The Hulkster Vipe.
Hulkamania.
No, all of a sudden, I have found first gen Vipers to be oddly charming.
Well,
I mean, they're shit boxes. You ever drive one?
No.
They're awful. I mean, they're junk. They really are. They're proper fucking trash. They're trashy cars for trashy people, and yet I like them. Have you ever seen one with the handbrake pulled up?
I'm not going to make whatever joke. You just tied those three things together, but I'm not.
You ever see one with the handbrake pulled up?
What?
It's as if Carol Shelby said, "Make it look like my cock when I see some big old titties," because it's just this. It's just like it. They haven't attempted to blend it into the tunnel at all. It's
and
just
is a, it like a Dodge Neon?
It's like
part
it goes like if my fucking hand was a handbrake, it lays like this when it's off, and when it's on, it's like this between you and the passenger. I mean, it's like the most afterthought garbage thing.
Well, what are we talking? 91,
92 at to
Dodge,
94. Yeah. Oh,
right?
Yes.
I mean, what were they doing? You know
the
what I mean?
The worst. I mean, just the worst. Yeah, they didn't give a fuck. The ones that don't even have windows.
But interestingly, so what we were talking about before, which was whatever that, you know, Miata
Oh, the Fiat thing?
Yeah, Fiat thing. Like, talking about, you're like, but it's a bad car. Well, everything said about Dodge, right? Maybe it was a bad car, too, but guess what? It's sort of...
It's oddly charming.
It sort of overcomes that.
Yeah, I don't... But I'm not sure the Fiat was ever charming.
Yeah, that's true. I'm with you.
I was supposed to review the Fiat in Italy. And I went all the way...
And you said, I'll pass? I don't need that after, Como
after driving
time,
it,
I'll
I
pass.
Drove it for 4 hours... And then I said,
can't review it.
I said, I have nothing good to say about this. I can't even pretend. Just take it back and pretend it never happened.
There's not some Miata special sauce.
Ever,
positivity.
Nothing.
Because you're pro Miata or you're anti Miata?
No, I'm pro Miata.
Yeah, I am too.
Pro Miata.
But you couldn't find any.
Nothing. The engine was worse. The chassis was worse. It was heavier, uglier.
So it's the fact that the Miata exists that car cannot succeed.
Of course. Yeah. That guarantees that it can't succeed. I mean, it might be kind of lame on its
like
own.
If the Miata
but
was gone, and then they're like, here's,
it's not
what,
the only time that's
here's
happened.
What you got.
I went to Italy. I think it was the same trip. It was the same trip. And I went to the Alfa Romeo test track where they developed the 4C. And
sick.
I fucking hated the 4C.
You brought one of those to SF. And
I did.
You remember that?
You remember how much I hated it?
Yes.
Yeah, I hated it then. But this was after that. And I was like, we're going to go to the test track. And I go, well, they developed it here. So even if it sucks in San Francisco, and even if it sucks in Detroit, that was the other place I drove it, and even if it sucks in L.A., it must be good here. This is the track they developed, and it went there. It sucked there. I don't get it. It's terrible here.
I wanted to like that car.
Great
so
looking,
much. Man.
Time will be kind to it because the longer that time goes on, if it looks good and sounds good, nobody cares if it drives like shit. Mm. That's the rule of Alfa 8C.
Mm.
The rule of Alfa 8C Competizione is
interesting.
Yeah, they drive like trash too, but they look great and they sound great, and nobody cares. You know, or Vipers.
So a sell, we did a buy, we did a hold.
Yeah.
What the heck's a
what's
sell
what's about
right
to take
now?
A dive?
I mean, yeah.
912s? No.
Man, do you see the one that went?
Did one go for big money?
200. and there's a really nice one on right now. People think those are six-figure cars. It's funny that you joke about that. We still joke about your visit and some of your remarks when you recorded the podcast at BAT offices. Because
why did I miss a few?
No, we were talking about 912s, and you were like, "Yeah, it's a great car if you're deaf," which is just a classic.
That's
absolutely
funny.
Classic.
I'll stand by that now.
I know you will.
Four years later, I will stand by that.
I just think it's hilarious.
That's
and
hilarious.
The guys that own 912s in the office refer to that.
I drove one
so
great
anyway,
one.
Shout out
one
to
guy,
Alex
one guy had a really nice one that with a Benton motor in it that I thought was really cool.
Sure.
But short of that.
But
not good.
Man, are Porsche's going to nosedive? I don't know. I don't think so. You see, I mean, you were at Lufkekult, man.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people are freaking crazy and like tattoo Porsche across their arms?
I was at Luft, and it's if they keep that going, that'll only help.
Man.
What about sell your Duesenbergs?
Oh, early big dollar stuff. Yeah, those stuff. That's soft. I don't know. What are we giving advice to people to sell Duesenbergs? Anybody who's got a Duesenberg doesn't care.
Sell your Allards.
Yeah. I don't know. That seems like a weird spot. I mean, there has been a run. You could think it's really funny because I just said it's the buy.
Yeah.
But are all those Ferraris and are all those Porsches that have run up like crazy over the last, you know, call it 12 months, are they going to go soft like, early 90s sort of stuff? Speculate on that. I'm gonna really bend minds if I say the buy and the sell.
Everyone who bought their 959s in the last 2 years has got their. As soon as they
nowhere?
Come up on a major,
yeah.
Jeff Swart told me, run.
Is that
he
right?
Said, run, don't walk. From the 959.
You're killing me. That's what, that was my dream car.
Oh, they're
a kid.
Awesome, but run.
But
that's
ownership.
That's what Jeff said, and he bought his. You know.
Perfectly.
He bought his perfectly and sold it perfectly and still told me, run, don't walk.
Yeah. His was red and I think registered in California and now they're all registered in Montana.
Of course they are because taxes are for poor people.
But that those cars are around. Man, I like those. I like those a lot.
So. I mean, I love the idea of one.
Yeah.
But not for me.
Don't do
it. Nope, not for me. I if, you know, costs are virtually unlimited budget, true unlimited budget, McLaren F1 is obviously the thing. Virtually unlimited budget, F40 is the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, for me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I love my 328, but I don't not wish it was an F40.
Totally.
That's the shit. Bring a trailer. Now on mostly owned by Hearst.
Yeah.
It's okay. I work for Hearst too. It's not bad.
People thought it was going to be really different. Like, oh, BAT.
Did they pay you on time? Because that we could commiserate on
that.
Oh,
okay. Well, I don't know about that, man.
No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, their check's cash.
Yeah.
And they really have mainly shored up what we needed them to and said, Randy, you keep running the vision. We don't want it to change. And
nice.
It was like, everybody was like, oh, it's going to be covered with advertising because that's their you know, main way of doing things. And
it's not really.
It's not at all. It's yeah. the same as before. So
yeah.
we've tried to keep as much continuity as we can.
Well, thanks for coming in, Randy. It's good to
yeah,
see you.
Yeah, you bet. I love this.
I was good times to see you in Germany. Mm-hmm. It's good times to see you now. Mm-hmm. I hope you buy something while you're in town. Maybe if you see something out here, we could make something happen.
Yeah, you got for sale signs on the cars out in the
right?
shop or no?
I have a Delica that I'm telling you, you would love.
Oh, that's why you want to loan it to me. So it's
no.
This is borrowed.
My wife would kill me.
Okay.
She
that's
loves
keeper,
that
right?
car.
That's keeper.
I mean, I don't. I never say
that.
Forever anymore. No, she has both. That she loves the. She likes them both. I have.
Cool.
I could just buy my wife a weird Japanese car for her birthday every single year, and she'll never get. That's why I build these fucking places to keep my wife's stuff.
That's great.
You know, and yeah, no, I'm going to Arizona tomorrow, so I'll have. I'll be at the Auto Car Club Saturday morning. With Donnie and Marco from TLG Auto. We're driving the old cars out there, so that'll be a good time.
And I'm
time.
Sorry, I missed Zach. I wish Zach was here. I wish we could
yeah,
chat.
Yeah, he's on a gig. But
he brought the Crown Vic to SFL back in the day, which was some of my favorite laughs we had. But
that
I know he's into BMWs and
that
stuff
Crown
now.
Vic lived a fucking life. Yeah, his BMW, I mean, he could have bought three BMWs for what he spent on that one. You know, it makes me nervous.
Laughs. Wish we could have some laughs. We'll do it again and bring him in.
Yeah, but thanks for coming in. Thank you to our patrons for asking your questions. We certainly appreciate it. And this show may not get up right away. For that, I'm sorry, but I don't know how to do it. That's a Zach thing. As soon as he can do it, he will, I promise. And we'll see you guys later. Bye.